Welcome to My Turn Podcast, a games podcast hosted by extra competitive siblings. Hello, hello, I'm Jem, and I'm joined by...
Hello, I am Erim, and I am also joined by...
Hello, I am Bilen, and there's three of us. We're siblings. Woo!
Yay!
I love how I introduce you, just like set it up for you to say your name and you both say hello. So it sounds like your name is Hello, I'm Erim.
Well, I had to follow the same pattern after Erim had done that. I couldn't then break the pattern. It wouldn't make any sense.
Sorry, I'm not good at these slick intros. We're not all pros like you.
Also, Erim did change his name by deed poll to Hello, I'm Erim.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah,
that's
true. Oh, I thought following from our last episode, he changed it to the stinky one.
That's like the middle name.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Erim, the stinky one, Armet.
But thank you, listeners, for joining us for the latest edition of My Turn Podcast. We are recording this on Lunar New Year, so Happy New Year, everyone! Year
happy
of the Dragon.
New Year.
Oh,
is it? Oh,
yeah.
My year next year.
Is that today? I thought it was yesterday.
I mean, it was. I mean, it's but it's celebrated.
Oh, yeah, it's a multi-day event. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
We are here to talk about some games with you, lovely listeners, because we are what?
We're competitive gaming siblings who love games and nerds. We're nerds.
Yeah, a bit. And geeks. Geeks and nerds.
I don't know about geeks.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you.
No, yeah. And me.
Oh, okay, maybe you too. I'm just a nerd.
Any more adjectives you want to throw into the pot?
Boo, I don't know, actually. Competitive.
Definitely you just competitive. Said competitive.
Well, I want to emphasize
repetitive,
competitive, uninventive. Now it's a wrap.
So on the pod, we like to review games that we've been playing. We're not always up to speed with the most current games, but sometimes we are. We mix it up for you. And we like to talk about games across all platforms and formats. So you can expect to hear video games reviews, board games reviews, occasionally street games reviews, escape room reviews. We've got a few of those in the backlog. So check out what we've recorded reviews on previously if you're joining us for the first time. But today, we're all on the video games today, I think?
Yeah, we're
all
on the video games.
Oh, we are. Oh, lovely. So I'm going to be talking about a game called Cocoon, which was a 2023 release. Erim, what are you talking about today?
I'm going to be talking about an old school game, actually, Stronghold, which was a 2001 release. Yeah, no, I've proper gone back to nostalgia.
You were like still at school then.
Yeah, I think, just into secondary school. I remember playing it on our Windows 95 computer.
Wow. I was still
It's still a really cool game.
You were both still at school. I'm the old one. I was at uni.
Anyway, what about you, Bilen?
I'll be talking about Hollow Knight, which is a 2017 game.
Slightly modern.
I think I picked it up in 2018 and then didn't play it for ages.
Okay, so we've got a real mixed bag for you then, and very different types of games as well, actually. So we've got a puzzler, we've got a strategy, and then we've got a super hard Metroidvania platformer. So we're bringing it all to you today, listeners, bringing it all to you. So who would like to kick us off with our reviews?
I went first last time, so how about we go...
Okay, I'll go first. All right, Bilen. So tell us again the game you're talking about. And could you describe it for us in a nutshell?
Well, the game I'm talking about is Hollow Knight. And in a nutshell, I would say it's a horse chestnut, otherwise known as a conker. Because conkers are used for playing conkers, so they have to be hard. And it's also quite spiky on the outside. So the theme is it's hard and spiky.
Okay. Very nice. And also the character has little horns as well, right?
Yeah, I wasn't really thinking about that. The character does have a mask with horns.
Lovely. And tell us when this came out, who developed it, who published it, and what it's available on and what you're playing it on.
So it came out in 2017. It was a full game created based on a concept developed in a Ludum Dare game jam. The developer is Team Cherry. And they have released it on, I think, every platform. I'm currently playing it on Nintendo Switch.
Lovely. All right. Well, just give us a little intro into what kind of game is this? What are you doing? What's the way into the game?
Ah, so this game is an unnamed silent protagonist goes to a strange world called Hallownest. and then tries to fulfill some kind of unstated prophecy of replacing the eponymous Hollow Knight. It's a platformer, but also a Metroidvania, and it's very, very hard at times, but also very fun.
Yeah, so being a Metroidvania, is it hopping from dungeon to dungeon, that kind of...
No, so Metroidvania, it's much more similar to something like Super Metroid, where it's a single, large, open world.
Okay.
And you can only reach certain regions if you have abilities which are unlocked by finding them in the world, or perhaps by defeating bosses.
Okay. Very nice. All right. So what does the game do well? I mean, you've told us it's hard. So
yes.
What is it that keeps you playing this game? What is good about it?
So there are several things which the game does very well. So as with most Metroidvanias, there's a lot of freedom in the movement. But the way this game has been designed is such that you can actually complete the game without getting many of the abilities. Mm-hmm. So unlike Super Metroid, you need almost all of your abilities to get to
access
the final
different
boss.
Levels. Yeah.
In this one, you can go via different routes and only acquire a minimum set of abilities to get to the final boss and defeat them. Mm-hmm. But you can just explore and get other abilities, and you get the abilities in different orders.
Yeah.
So
I'm assuming it will be very difficult to defeat the boss then if you've not fully powered up then.
Yeah, there's a minimum level you need. Unless you're doing some glitchy speed runs, but you can face the final boss underpowered. Although the final boss itself isn't actually as hard as some of the other bosses that I've come across.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've heard about this that some of the sort of penultimate couple of bosses are way harder.
Yeah, there's some like random hidden side bosses that if you go through a spike maze to get to, and then you've got this boss to defeat, and it's just like that was hard. And then you get to the final boss and it's like, that was actually quite easy. There is another final boss. And then there's kind of like extra levels at the end with more bosses who are much, much harder for people who really want to just go boss rush mode or something like that. The other thing that it does really well is the music is written by Christopher Larkin.
Oh, nice.
And it's absolutely amazing. I listen to it a lot at work, just as background music. Really, really good atmospheric music. Mm-hmm. So I would listen to the soundtrack even if you're not playing the game.
Yeah, nice. The old spouse played. I call him the old spouse. That's
the old
mean.
Spouse.
Alex played played
your
this.
Husband.
Yeah, the old hubby, the spouse, played this, and it does sound amazing. The music. I didn't realise who it was by, but yeah, that's good stuff. Any other sort of highlights or things that you like about the way the game's designed or put together or plays?
I do like the difficult platform elements. So not only is it really hard in that the boss fights are ridiculously hard, similar at times to bullet hell shooters in the way you have to dodge their projectiles whilst also landing blows to whittle away their health. That I actually get wound up by, but the platforming sections, I haven't yet played the Path of Pain, which is like horrible.
Yeah.
But some of the platforming sections are really difficult and you just have to go at it a few times unless you're like really, really, really good.
Yeah.
But those are fun. And it reminds me of like Mario games where you get to like the final bonus level and you have to repeat it over and over just to get the timing of your jumps spot on. But the
those
mechanics...
are the times like when I used to have it on like Mario DS and chuck my DS on the floor and say, fucking Mario!
Yeah, but the mechanics Nintendo of like, the special moves you have mean that actually you can get through the different spike mazes, as I'll refer to them, using different abilities. And like if you watch speedrunners online, they find skips and really weird shortcuts that you can do because like you can fire a projectile which gives you some kickback, which then might allow you to double jump a little bit further on round a corner than you would have done if you hadn't done that. And it's all very complicated, but it's actually really fun to just have a play around with. Oh, what happens if I do this move and then that move rather than in the other order? And see if I can get through the spike maze that way.
Mm. Nice. And what about, so obviously, yeah, this is famously a difficult game. You've expressed some of that as well. What about the kind of saves, loading points? Like, are you having to do whole sections all from the beginning again? Is it really unforgiving in that way? Or
that... That is something that winds me up. So the save points, you have to go to a bench or something else that you can sit on. And I like this mechanic because the rest of the game, when you're playing, anything you do, the game goes on around you whilst you're doing that thing, including sitting on a bench. But benches are in safe spaces. So you can sit on a bench and save, and you can modify your charms, which are like modifiers to your character. They might buff your... health or damage or something like that. You can modify them on the bench. If you want to look at your map whilst walking around or your inventory whilst walking around, the enemies can still hit you, which is realistic. That's great. And that's fine. The benches, unfortunately, aren't always obvious and aren't always near bosses. So sometimes they're near a boss, but you just haven't seen the bench. You stumble into a boss fight and you can't then go back and get to the nearby bench.
Oh, is it not obvious it's a boss fight then?
Not always. Sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I think this room is a boss fight room, and then you can go back. But sometimes there isn't even a bench nearby.
Like,
there's a boss called the Hive Knight, and the nearest bench is like four rooms away. And there's a bunch of enemies in between, some of whom are a bit annoying.
God, this sounds like my idea of hell.
But yeah, if you die, you go back to the last bench you saved at. So if you if you happened to come across a boss that's four rooms away from a bench, that's not that bad. It's annoying because you have to go through four rooms again to get to the boss, to fight the boss again.
Yeah.
But if you happen to go through a new area, didn't find a bench, then found a boss, you might have like... 5 to 10 minutes of backtracking to do to get back to that boss fight. And you have to go back to the boss fight if you die. Because when you die, you leave behind a shade who has all of your geo, the in-game currency.
Like a Souls-like, you do that. You pick everything back up again.
And you have to kill your shade in order to regain your geo. Fine, you can dump your geo. It's not that big a deal if you don't have very much of it. And there are ways to store it to some extent. But you also need to kill your shade because otherwise your health bar has a little chunk missing from like the... Your health bar doesn't have anything missing, but you recharge using soul, and the maximum soul you have is reduced by a small amount, which means your ability to recover your health without going to a bench is reduced until you kill your shade. And the backtracking to get to your shade is really frustrating if you happen not to have found a bench.
This sounds like remote through TV kind of frustration, to be honest. It's why I like Baldur's Gate. You can quick save before you explore something.
Come on, I love a quick save. Yeah. Bring a quick save.
Any of your save stuff. So like if you've uncovered an ability, it'll quick save. That's fine. You go back to the bench after dying.
But I mean, like,
you have all your abilities, but you have to go back and get.
It's more like if I see some massive thing that I'm not sure whether it's going to be a friend or a foe, quick save and then go and talk to it, and then it kills me, and they're like, all right, I'm going to avoid that next time.
Yeah.
You get to re-roll the dice in,
or just kill everything.
All right. So we've touched on things that are maybe slightly more negative. Was there any other negatives or things that you thought worked less well in this game? Or is that kind of...
I think it's just the backtracking is annoying. Yeah, everything else is really good. I love the platforming elements. The combat's great. And the fights are difficult if you're not like amazing at this kind of game or you know, haven't practiced loads at it. But I think they're fair. So yeah, it's good to practice. It's just annoying having to backtrack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important comment to make actually, that they're fair, because you know there are some games where some of the boss fights are just like just stupid. Just why? Just why has someone designed this way? The frustration, they're not satisfying. But you're saying you're finding this more satisfying and fun to play, which is very important. And is there anything else that you think is of note that you'd want to share with people before we move to your recommendations?
So I only barely touched on the charm mechanic, but there's lots and lots of charms that you unlock through the game, and you can apply them to your character when you get to benches. But they allow you to customize the way in which you play the game a lot. So in addition to being able to go through the different areas in different orders, you can just use different charms And that means there's a lot of replayability and playing with different builds of your character. So I think that's a good thing about the game as well, even though I generally go for the same charms all the time because I like them. I see people playing online with different builds and it's like, oh, actually, that's quite interesting. And then some of them are very broken, which are really good for people who just want to do like boss rush mode.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a fun thing to play with.
Nice. And just quickly, you mentioned watching people online. Obviously, the benefit of picking up a game that's been out for a few years is that you can go and watch videos and things. And a game like this does have a sort of fan community. So how much are you getting out of that community and the existing sort of rhetoric and trial and error and fun that's been had?
I just like watching them because they can play the game a lot better than I can. And it's actually really fun watching really good gamers play ridiculously hard levels in games. People have modded the game to make it even harder. They've made something, I can't even remember what the hardest version is called, if it's Absolute Radiance or Ultimate Radiance or something like that. The true final boss has been modded, designed to be impossible, and then people manage to beat it still.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. People have done the
These
Path
people
of
hate
pain.
Themselves. Yeah.
Gluttons for punishment.
The Path of Pain, which apparently the typical player will take 8 hours to beat because it's that hard, you die so many times.
Yeah.
People have done that without taking damage and speedrun it in a ridiculously fast time. Like, I can't even remember what the time was, but they knocked it down by like over a minute from the original.
I don't understand how speedrunners managed to find like all these little details. Like, I remember watching an Ocarina of Time speedrun. They're like, oh, if you just glitch through this wall and then you end up at like the spirit temple, it's like, how have you got there?
That is a community effort often though, isn't it? It's a few people playing the game who chat to each other, who like figure things out. And it's not, I mean, occasionally there'll be one person who will just do it because they have no life. But often it's people who are playing the game at the same time, trial and error. Oh, have you noticed this? Have you noticed that?
It's talking about the Spirit Temple in Ocarina of Time and people with no life. I did actually, as Child Link, try to go backwards through the desert to get to the Gerudo Fortress or whatever it's called in Ocarina of Time. And that is a thing that you can do.
Wow. Well, there we go. I think that brings us on to recommendations. So with everything you've said about Hollow Knight, who would you recommend this to?
I would recommend it to anyone who likes Metroidvanias and anyone who likes Souls-like games. Anyone who plays a game for the atmosphere and the music and the world building, that would be good for them. Mm. Not casual gamers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also people who probably like me, who know they just really don't like boss fights. Probably not for me.
If you've got someone who can do the boss fights for you, then you can play the game. But if you hate boss fights, then maybe avoid.
Great. And what would you... Oh, quickly, how long did it take you to beat the game?
Oh, I did just beat the game recently. And it was 20 hours is the time that it says.
Is that with the additional...
includes all the deaths. That's not 100% completion. That's a normal completion.
Game beaten.
With about 86%.
Okay. Yeah, pretty good.
There are really loads of achievements you can unlock. One of them, I think, is for beating the game in less than 5 hours.
Oh, blimey. Okay. Wow. Very nice. Mm. And what would you rate this game out of 10?
So I would give it maybe an 8 out of 10, because even though it's very good, the backtracking is so annoying.
Fair enough. And who knows, maybe Hollow Knight 2 will come out at the end of 2024.
Maybe. It's like been announced many years ago.
It's been pushed back several times.
I can't even remember when it was announced, but what, 6 years ago, maybe? Something stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been sort of teased again at the end of last year as coming out at the end of 2024, but the way things are going, it'll probably be 2025.
It will never be released. Never.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Billen. Erin, why don't we go back in time a bit further and into your childhood?
Oh my god!
Remind us of the game and
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, because I spoke about Baldur's Gate recently and how it's like a real blast from the past in terms of like how RPGs used to be. It's kind of got me revisiting like one of my old favorite games called Stronghold. Mm-hmm. So this is a game that was made in released in 2001 by Firefly Studios. Mm-hmm. Originally, we were playing it on our old Windows 95 computer.
That little,
well, I say little, like chunky grey thing. Yeah. But like, then it, like, the graphics and like the gameplay just seems really, really good. And even to this day, it really, really holds up. So yeah, but in a nutshell, it is a... I'd say it is a strategy game, but it's also a castle building simulator, which is probably a bit more accurate.
Okay.
So the nut I describe it as is a coconut.
Again!
We had coconuts last time.
I think coconuts are like a universal.
Coconuts are a pretty good nut.
No, I was actually going to say a walnut because...
Walls.
Yeah, exactly.
Go with walnut. Don't go with coconut.
Yeah, but coconut, because it's hard on the outside and full of squishy goodness for the enemies on the inside.
The inside isn't that squishy.
Well, full of goodness that they're trying to get. They're trying to get your good juiciness.
I mean, a coconut it's got a pretty good fortification.
Basically,
in terms of its shell
until
being very
we move
hard.
On to like something else, I'm just going to do coconut and make it relevant for everything. What? That's an even better challenge.
Boring.
It's not boring.
Boring.
It's creative.
Boring.
It's giving myself...
Okay, all right. So, you've described it as a coconut.
Well, a walnut, but a coconut.
Okay, great. So briefly sum up the kind of gameplay then. What are you doing when you play this game? What are you playing it on this time, did you say?
So, I'm playing it on Parallels, yeah. So, it used to be able to play it on Mac, but because of the whole 64-bit only supported on Macs, you can't do it now. So, yeah, just doing like a Parallels Windows, like, kind of simulator and just playing it like that. And it's, you know, old enough graphics that it works fine. So it is, like I said, it's a castle simulator building game. You take the role of a lord and you basically have to, build up your economy, also your military, to defend your stronghold. Mm-hmm. That is probably the best way I can briefly describe
Brilliant.
It.
All right. So you're revisiting this game. Mm-hmm. So what's positive for you on this sort of second or third playthrough? what's kind of sticking out as the joyful thing?
It's so good. I love the fact you have to like build up defenses and be quite creative with it. I also feel like even though the graphics are retro, they still hold up to this kind of day. Mm. I just haven't really come across another game like this. It really emphasizes on actually building up your castle rather than like defending and attacking, like things like Age of Empires. And the way you build up your castles and stuff, it's all down to you. You literally pick every single bit of wall.
You do decorate it?
Yeah, you can decorate it if you want.
Nice. A bit of flag, a bit of draping.
Yeah. So there's kind of like, I can't remember the exact word for these, but there's things you can put in your castles, like say, for example, like stocks and like cages to frighten your villagers to work fast, or you can put things like maypoles to help them feel a bit more like positive, and it makes your warriors also fight better, but your villagers become more lazy. your economy kind of goes down, but you can charge more money like in taxes, and also your warriors fight a bit better. So yeah, you can have a bit of
nice
a balance
strategy there.
Yeah, and if you're smart, you can just put up loads of horrible things, make them work really fast, and then when you get attacked, destroy them, put all the nice things up, and then your warriors are so powerful.
Nice. Genius. So what I'm hearing is this is basically Animal Crossing with a mix with Total War.
No, it's so different from Total War. So Total War, yeah.
I just meant that you could do some decorating.
Yeah, I do like the Animal Crossing.
The Animal Crossing bit is right. Yeah. I'm not sure about the Total War. Like I said, it is a very different kind of game. What is doing well, like I'm still enjoying, like I said, the free building aspect of it. And I really like the campaign, actually. Which I'll give you a brief summary of. Basically, the whole of the UK has been, I think it's the whole of the UK? The whole of mainland England and Scotland has been taken over by four lords that have ousted king.
What kind of period is this?
Medieval.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, I should have said, shouldn't I? Yeah, they've ousted the king and split the main British land into four different kind of, I guess, regions controlled by four different lords. And you progressively have to fight through all of these lords and all of these lands to take back the whole of the lands and give it back to the lord, basically. And they progressively get harder. And as you go through the campaign, you get introduced to more and more kind of like technology to either defend or to like build better troops. So yeah, it just progressively gets more and more complicated. It's a really nicely paced thing. And by the end of it, it's really like, you know, you're getting attacked constantly by guys with like heavy armor. And you've got like really, really cool defenses, like set people on fire, put catapults and like scorpions on top of walls and stuff like that. Yeah, I just love the campaign. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, and does it play out sort of in real time, or is it you've set your strategy and then watch it play
out? No, it's all in real time. So that you'll have like a time period normally when you've got like a bit of downtime to actually build up your defences, and then it'll normally be different waves of attack progressively getting harder and harder. And even though like the gameplay is very, very much like the same thing, almost rinse and repeat, it's still quite fun because obviously all the different terrain and the way you make your castles and stuff actually keep it quite entertaining in that respect.
Nice. That sounds it sounds really interesting, actually. Yeah. Is there anything that works less well about it? And bearing in mind you're going back to it, like, is there anything you sort of wish was different?
Oh, to be honest, like, it still holds the same opinion to me. So the majority of this game is about defending your stronghold, but there are the occasional missions where you have to actually attack. And I feel like there's something a bit weird in the mechanic of like the gameplay. If you get two sets of troops like running at each other, whereas like Total War games or Age of Empires games, they have to kind of like either go around or stay in formation and wait until someone dies. In this game, the troops literally go on top of each other. So you have like the different spikes literally on top of each other, killing each other. So you have like about 100 men running into each other. You have by the end of it, like a flat line of 10. Just like fighting and then whoever wins, and then all of a sudden that 10 men will become 100 men kind of thing. It's just like kind of loses a little bit of that. It feels a bit clunky and not executed. The sieging, I think, could have been done a lot better, as in when you are sieging. And then obviously like the actual land battle-y doesn't happen that often. Normally it's defending, but when you are like troops on troops, like flat out, it does feel a bit weird, and they could have done a bit of a better job of that.
Is that sort of typical of the era though?
No, because it's around the same time as things like I think medieval Total War was out then, and that was fine. You had Age of Empires 2 roughly around that same time, that was fine. Cossacks, which is another game I'd like to touch on in future, which is literally like Age of Empires meets Total War because of the grand scale. But all of that is fine. I don't know why they just didn't manage it with this for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's a small negative because, like I said, the majority of the game is you defending. And that bit of the game is absolutely brilliant, even to this day.
Nice. Mm. All right. And is there anything else that, of note that you'd like to mention?
The voice acting. It's so corny. Especially the first enemy that you have to kill, the rat. He's like proper like, like really squeaky.
Go on, Erin, give us an example.
That is coming to play. It's like proper like pantomime villain voice. But the characters are really good. Like once you beat him, you get another guy called the Snake, who kind of reminds me of Peter Baelish from Game of Thrones.
Oh, right.
Like a very, very similar kind of scheming, will betray you. Yeah. And often does like do some like backhanded deals with you and then like just, betrays you at the last minute and really lets you down. Then you've got the pig that's basically like a football hooligan. I love him. He's brilliant as well. And then the last boss is the wolf who literally is like, I guess, the gladiator. Do you remember him, the wolf?
Yeah.
I feel like there might have been something drawn there, like just of like real nasty, very tough final boss who has like all the best troops and all the best equipment. But I think like the characters in it are really, really cool. Like it feels child friendly but also engaging enough for adults as well.
Good point, because you were at school when you were playing this. It's nice that there's some of these sort of you know, more creative strategy games that that kids can access, you know. Yeah, nice. Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Thank you.
All right, so who would you recommend this game to then?
Honestly, I think, like, especially considering a lot of my younger students who are playing Baldur's Gate are, like, so blown away by, like, that old school gameplay. And a few of them said, I just want to play it again. I really would like to see a younger generation be playing this again, actually, because I think kids would love it. Like, there's definitely, like, an element of sandboxiness to it where you can be really creative. And I feel like, yeah, just it was such a good game from my childhood. I feel like younger generations would really enjoy it. But I think really anyone above the age of, like, 8 could probably be fine with it. It's not too complicated to play, but it's also... it's challenging enough.
And it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is straddling that true strategy game with something that's a little bit more hands-on accessible.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if you're into strategy games like you are, Aaron, there is a community for that. Mm-hmm. The games serve you. A lot of the time, if you're not in part of that community, don't play those games. Like, I will look at those games and go, that looks cool. I'm probably never going to play it, right? So, but it sounds like this is something that would kind of bridge that gap, and maybe there's you know, an opening for more of these kinds of games.
I would love to see it. I think there has been a few games like it coming out. I think, is it Bannerlords? I think is very much like that. There's one where it is. It feels very much like a modern version of Stronghold, where you are a lord and you actually have to build up a village and also train troops. I don't know whether there's the castle building element of it yet. I can't remember if it is Bannerlords or whether it's a different game. But it does feel like that might... there might be some sort of resurgence.
Well, I know, like, as a Game Pass user, the Xbox and Game Pass are putting out... They're platforming some strategy games now. So I think they're going to potentially reach a broader audience, because if you've got a PC and you've got Game Pass... It's a risk-free, like, experience. You've already got Game Pass, you might as well try it. So that's the kind of beauty of that service, I guess. Yeah. So maybe there will be a bigger audience. And as you say, Baldur's Gate has really captured the imaginations of a new audience of game players that won't have been exposed to that kind of gameplay. So, nice. So what would you rate this game out of 10, Erim?
Oh, I'd give it an 8. It's a real good game. Like, obviously, it's not perfectly executed. But yeah, just the castle building element. Also, I should have said the music is really fun as well. And the quirky voice acting still, like, makes me grin to this day. It's really cool. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I'm glad I've revisited it. And I'm sure it won't be my last time playing it again in the future.
Lovely. Yeah. Oh, very nice. Hopefully it'll get brought back to more accessible platform that people can get it on.
Or maybe a remaster or a re-release.
Well, they have done a HD re-release. I think probably around 2010 kind of time there was a HD re-release. There's been other iterations of it. So there's been Stronghold 2, Stronghold 3, Stronghold Crusaders, and also Stronghold Crusaders 2.
Have you played them?
I've played a bit of Stronghold 3 and it wasn't very good, to be honest. I found it really I don't know, it was a bit shit. I don't know what it is, but sometimes when games go over to being more 3D, where you've got, like, a bit more control of camera angles, it almost makes it a bit more cartoony. It's like Age of Empires 3, I found.
When you twist the camera.
Yeah. Just for some reason, weird, the graphics don't quite feel right. And yeah, the gameplay wasn't too good, so I didn't really spend too long on it, to be honest. I think it's one of those games that just, you know, the original one is the formula you should have kept to. A bit like Roller Coaster Tycoon. The first one was banging.
Oh yeah, I love Roller Coaster Tycoon.
It's just a bit... didn't really do it for me.
I don't think I played the third one. I think I played the first two.
Yeah, don't play it. I mean, if you're going to play anything, is it called, Coaster Planet? I think that's the one.
Was the one, there was one
Planet
that you,
Coaster,
Planet
it,
Coaster,
yeah.
You reviewed it on the pod. Yeah, go trawl back through and hear your thoughts on that.
But I think there's another theme park game that's also come out relatively recently that's a lot better than Roller Coaster Tycoon 3.
I love the theme park games. The Roller Coaster Tycoon, theme park, the original theme park was
great.
Play
Coaster Planet is so good. It is so good.
I feel like I've grown out of those kind of games.
Oh, still
because
so much fun.
They're hard to complete without getting bored of the repetitive aspects of them. And I like completing games.
Yeah.
But you, really, the best thing is the sandbox element. You just want to build up one level, which is super awesome.
Yeah.
And see how many people you can kill with your roller coaster.
Well, I guess there's that. But like with things like Coaster Planet, obviously every scenario, every environment is different. You can build it up how you want. So I guess the experimentation is where the originality of the game comes from.
Yeah.
Like, as in... Yeah, for you not to get bored.
I think that's why. Similar that's why. This. Yeah, that's why there are, like, it just is what you're into, I guess, as a gamer, and the things that bring you satisfying experiences. Mm. And I don't know, maybe I know I posed this to you when we were chatting before, but I think it'd be quite nice if each of us takes our preferred gameplay type and top tens, like you know, Erin's top 10 strategy games of all time.
Oh my god,
Bilen's top 10. What would it be? Hard.
I don't know, because I really like Zelda games.
You like Zelda games,
and I really like Metroidvanias.
You do.
Yeah, I'd go between strategy and RPG, I think, are my two favourites. But I would be well up for that, to be honest.
Yeah. See, I would really love to, because I'm revisiting a lot of old puzzlers at the moment. I'd love to do a top 10 puzzle games.
All right, let's make this happen.
Which I am actually going to be reviewing a puzzle game next. So good segue.
Yeah, fantastic segue. So over to you, Jem. What are you talking about again?
I'm going to be talking about a 2023 release called Cocoon, which is a puzzle adventure game developed by Geometric Interactive, published by Annapurna Interactive. A few episodes ago, I said, oh, I'm playing this game. And I was like, oh, it's from Annapurna. And then I doubled back on myself because I was really sleep deprived. I was like, no, it isn't. It's the people that made Limbo. Both are true.
Yes.
It's published by Annapurna. It's published by Annapurna. But the director, Jep Carlson, is the mind behind Limbo and Inside.
What type of nut is it?
Well, I've got a good nut for this one,
not
actually.
Not a coconut.
Everyone loves a coconut.
I don't think I've used this one before. Ooh. A pistachio. I don't know why I said it in that accent.
Have we not? I feel like
so
we might
pistachio, have for me, this game is a pistachio because...
Good as an ice cream flavour.
Yeah, I mean that too. Yeah, so really tasty, very tasty, very versatile. But also, pistachio is sort of a bit alien-y. Like you've got this really neutral coloured shell.
Yeah,
and inside it is green and occasionally like a bit purple and red. Like it's kind of alien-y. And when they're sort of roasted and they're part open, it sort of looks like a little kind of strange little beetle. And this game you're playing as is a third person puzzler, and you're playing as a kind of little insectoid beetle type thing. So pistachio.
Brilliant.
Pistachio's good. I like pistachios.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us about this game. Give us a little bit of a
So as I said, it was published in September 2023. Mm-hmm. It's available on all the platforms. And I've been playing it on Xbox Series X via Game Pass. I'm not going to sing Game Pass's praises anymore. I feel like I do it every week. So I heard good things about this game in a lot of the sort of 2023 roundups. And I'm basically playing 2023 backlog golf at the moment, trying to get through all the games I missed because I've been looking after Tiny Human. And finally getting some time to play some games. And I bloody love a puzzler.
Yeah.
Like where you love your strategy games and your RPG. I mean, I love a puzzler. I feel really good when I play puzzlers. I feel smart. I feel like I can solve puzzles that most people can't.
Yeah.
I really enjoy them when they're really tough and when they're inventive. And this game basically drops you straight in. And what I love about it is there's no hand-holding, there's no tutorial. You're just in, you're this little insectoid character and you're wandering about a kind of desert sort of biome, landscape, planet.
Yeah,
not sure what. It's a very fantastical setting, but you don't really know what you're doing or why you're doing it. However, instantly atmospheric. It's absolutely beautiful to look at. You've got the little insectoid person sort of jumping around. You can move it around. You've got one interact button and you just have to figure it out yourself what you're doing. But the music draws you in straight away. It's really beautiful and epic music. Mm-hmm. And you gradually move around the space and interact with the odd thing and realize, okay, I just need to progress. and you don't know what way you're progressing. Mm. Nothing is signposted. You've just got to go and go with it.
Okay.
And what happens from then on is puzzle after puzzle after puzzle. And a lot of brain bending joy.
Can you tell when you can interact with things, or is it just hammer the interact button until something works?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you walk up to things and basically you might stand on something and press the interact button and it might interact with you or it might not. Sometimes because you haven't unlocked the thing that means that can interact, and sometimes because that thing is just not something you can
interact
use.
With.
Yeah. So a typical puzzle, especially early on, is just traversal. So you're in this sort of desertscape and you're on the edge of a cliff and you might need to interact with something to cross the cliff onto another cliff, or get on a platform that suddenly turns into a spaceship. And I should say, I mentioned Alien with the pistachio because this is a really sort of nice conceptual mix between a sort of otherworldly, alien-y fantasy and this sort of organic, insectoid, really sort of zoomed out mini planets, I guess, where like you're tiny. Mm. I mean, I should say it's third person, but you're really zoomed out. Mm-hmm. So it's really tiny on the screen, which is lovely because you see these beautiful big... it's very sort of prog rock concept art. That's
oh,
the
is
style
it?
All
right.
of yeah. It is very that. Like, it is very much like the album covers that our dad.
So you've been listening to a
collected.
Lot of Tame Impala whilst playing this, yeah.
But it's some of the things that happen as you not even solve a puzzle but traverse a level are just so mind blowing. Like how they thought this concept up. Like a platform will turn into a spaceship. And then you'll fly through this sort of semi-organic planet, and then you'll do something else and you'll zoom into another planet. So without spoilers, we're dealing with sort of multi-planets and those are contained in orbs. Mm. I won't say too much about how you use them, but basically you need to figure out each orb has a function and you collect them as you go on, but the orb is also a planet that sometimes you're inside.
Okay.
Ooh, and I don't want to say much more because I don't want to go to spoilers, but it's really brain bending.
Yeah.
And yeah, as I say, the detail that they've gone into just with the background as you're flying across something is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wow.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like already there's a lot of positives in there. So, what is really like, what is highlighting the game in a positive way for you?
For me, I think that the puzzle design is really unique.
It flows.
It's a very flowy puzzle design. It reminded me somewhat of the experience of playing a game that I've reviewed previously on the pod called Goragoa, which was a hand illustrated puzzle game where, like, say you'd look at a picture, and that was very much based on art, and you'd look at a picture, say, and then you'd go into the eyeball as you solve a puzzle, and then you'd come back out again, and then you'd go into a plant, or, you know, like, It's very much playing around with perspectives, and I love the fact that your brain has to hold on to where you are in the order of this sort of multi-planetary traversal that you're dealing with, and unlocking routes and opening doors and crossing platforms that you need to do. It's really brain bending, but in a way that I really like.
Yeah.
As I say, it made me feel really smart because there was only maybe one time where I was like, I really have to look this up. But even when I looked it up, I only looked at the beginning to make sure I was on the right track. And then my brain figured out the rest.
Okay.
So it's just really good. It's nice. Really good puzzle design. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds really good. Anything that you're not too convinced of then?
Do you want to take a guess? What don't I like? What don't I like, guys?
Something frustrating.
Yeah.
In games. What do I hate?
Do you have
bosses.
To bosses. Oh, there's bosses.
Yeah,
oh,
I know. God. Why is there bosses in a puzzle game? I'm so annoyed. To be fair, they're fine. Like, the bosses are fine.
What do you have to do to beat the bosses? Like,
oh, man, it's so annoying.
Solve puzzles? Or is it
just... Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, do you have to attack?
No, you have to attack.
Oh, really?
You have to dodge. It's really annoying.
But you've only got one interact button.
Yes.
Interact.
For example, you might be launching a projectile that you can interact with at the boss. Yeah. You might be dodging. You might be jumping from one interactable platform to another to avoid things and then, like, chuck something at the boss. They're fine, right? There's nothing wrong with the boss fights. A couple of them are quite cool, I guess. It just took me out of the flow. This game, as I said, it's so atmospheric. Mm. The music is just like otherworldly. You're flowing from one puzzle to the other to the other. And there's enough challenge in those puzzles. They are really tough sometimes. And why is there boss fights? That's my one negative. Mm. It's like, why are they there? They're fine. They're quite well designed.
Yeah.
Just why? It just is a different type of game. Like I was very reminded of if either of you have had a little go at Death's Door, it sort of looks a bit like Death's Door. I wonder if they use the same engine. In fact, Alex was asking that question, if they use the same sort of design. Something about it reminded me of Death's Door. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but if you trigger a boss and you don't always know you're about to trigger it, you're just locked into doing that boss.
Yeah.
And you need to do the boss because it then gives you a thing that you need to carry on. But there's just sort of too many bosses.
It breaks your flow.
Just want to do puzzles and listen to this really dreamy music and be transported into this like alien world.
Yeah.
Are there other enemies or other combat outside? It's just the bosses.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't...
Very jarring,
again, it's almost like someone in the development stage said, oh, we need to have bosses in this. And it doesn't feel like it was designed that way.
Mm.
Especially knowing that the creative mind behind this designed a game that doesn't have boss fight. Designed, like, a couple of games that are really beautiful and slick and hard that don't have boss fights. So it's just really weird. It's jarring to me. But I know people have enjoyed the boss fights and found them a nice addition because it's different from a puzzle game. But, yeah, I was... Yeah.
Not for you. aspect of it.
Grumble. I will say though, the music in particularly the first boss fight is really cool.
Yeah. So is that your particular highlight of this, or is there anything else that it does that's quite unique for you? I mean,
I touched on the sort of puzzle design and just like the otherworldliness of the game and the fact it is true escapism. I think I'd really like to highlight that if you want a game, if you like a puzzler and you want a game that really takes your brain to another place, like at the end of a hard day or things like that, then I'm sort of recommending it, I guess. This is a beautiful game for that.
Yeah.
The other highlight is the soundtrack. It's absolutely beautiful.
I feel like that's been a big topic recently, hasn't it? Yeah. We've always been talking about how good soundtracks are.
Yeah, and I should say the composer is Jacob Schmid, and just really, like, it deserves credit because in this kind of game, they can sometimes jar, but this is, it's really, really nice. It really adds to the experience, I'd say. And definitely something I'd listen to just as a background for doing work or things. Yeah. Like, it's really nice, yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So obviously that's your recommendations. Anything else you want to add to that? Or are you happy with that?
No, did you have a question, Belen? You look like resting question face. I love that. I'd recommend this game to anyone who enjoys puzzle adventures or puzzle narratives. It's got a loose... Oh, yeah, I should say, actually. The narrative is very, very loose, but enough for you to want to know what is going on, if that makes sense. And I think if you like a puzzler, it is... You need to have a good working memory. And by that, I mean, you need to have the kind of brain that can hold different strands of puzzle in your head at once. Otherwise, I think you might get a bit frustrated with this, especially towards the end. However, it is accessible in the sense that there's a lot of trial and error that you can do to solve puzzles. And it is very beautiful and flowy. I'd say if you really hate boss fights, then...
Not the one for you.
I'd still play it and see if you can get on with them because they're not that hard. They're just tedious. Mm. And like having to redo them when you have to fail to figure out what you need to do. They're those kind of bosses. So you do end up doing them multiple times and I just found them tedious because the puzzles for me were so flowing. But I would, recommend it to anyone who likes puzzlers, specifically if you like the sort of third person ones. And if you fancy something a bit dreamy, and escapism-y, is that a word?
Yeah.
Escapism-y. Yeah, it's definitely a word. Didn't just make that up. So cool. How long does it take to complete, and does it have any replay value?
Oh, replay value, I'd say no, unless you want to get collectibles and trophies, which you can.
I like trophies.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say there's replay value because the puzzles are going to be the same every time. I probably took quite a long time to beat this. Maybe I think you can do it in like 10 hours. Mm. I probably took like 15 hours because stopping and starting. It's really hard to know because on Xbox, similar to Switch, if you pause it, the clock still goes sometimes.
So, there's no in-game timer.
Yeah, there's no in-game timer. So I think it came up as like 18 hours, but I didn't take 18 hours on it, but maybe like 12 to 15. But I think most people do it in 10. It's probably about a 10-hour game. It's sort of maybe a bit longer than you think it would be, looking at it.
Mm.
But really good game. If you've got Game Pass, definitely try it out.
Cool. All right. So that brings us on nicely to the rating. What would you rate it?
I'm going to give this 8 out of 10.
Hey.
Eight.
That's lucky. Infinity.
Well, no, I just meant like 8 is lucky in Chinese, isn't it? And then, Chinese Lunar New Year.
Lunar New Year, maybe. I don't know if it's lucky.
Oh.
Is it lucky?
I think so.
Someone search on the Google.
Don't know.
Uncle Google.
Someone else let us know. Is it lucky? I was just thinking in infinity, because an 8 is very similar to the infinity symbol.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing turned on its side.
Lucky 8 ball.
Yeah.
Ah, well, there we go. There we go, everyone.
Aaron is currently checking whether 8 is lucky.
In Chinese culture, the number 8 is regarded as one of the luckiest numbers. There you go.
Happy Lunar New Year.
Let's all buy lottery tickets.
Yeah, let's just get 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8 on our lottery tickets.
8, 18, 28, 38, 48. Is that as far as you can go?
No, they changed the national lottery in the UK recently. It goes up to 59. It used to go up to 49.
Added some more numbers, eh?
Added some more numbers.
Make it even more definite that you're not going to win.
Hey, yeah. I mean, who knows?
I won the tenner once. That was great.
I've only ever won £2.50.
Have you not?
No, why would I play?
Because you're not in it, you won't win it.
That's true. Also, if you are in it, you're probably not going to win.
Why? It's a game. Wait, is it a game?
It's gambling. Yeah, I mean, kind of, but I'm very much in the camp of gambling shouldn't be defined as a game because... No.
Really?
I don't like the fact that it's referred to as the gaming industry.
It's not. It's disgusting.
Is it?
Yeah, gaming.
Oh my God, no, it's not.
Anyway,
we digress. We're getting political now.
The National Lottery? Because someone bought me a lottery ticket for whichever birthday was the first year that I could legally have a lottery ticket. So in that respect, I might have incidentally played, but not ever actually bought a lottery ticket.
Mm. Oh, there we go. Yeah, I think I got one in like my 21st birthday card or something.
What happens if you win?
What do you mean?
Do you keep all the money?
Yeah, like, if you win, it's a gift.
It's your card.
Yeah, that's it. But I imagine if people buy lottery tickets for other people and the person that they bought the ticket for wins, they'd be pretty miffed.
I'd give them something back. Like,
I mean,
at least
you'd
just give them like the quid for the ticket.
But then that's just so weird. You don't give them a pound.
Why not?
Because...
So thank you. There you are.
You don't pay people for presents that they buy you. It is £2 now.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Anyway, we're massively digressing. Before we sign off, I'd love to hear from yourselves, listeners. Would you be interested in us doing a top 10 of our favourite kinds of games?
Yes.
I'm putting on the table top 10 puzzle games. Okay. Because I think I've played most of the
recommended ones. I hate puzzle games.
It's going to be so hard for me to come up with a top 10.
Oh. All right, Billen will think on it. Erin?
Yeah, I mean, definitely strategy games and RPG. I could do both quite happily.
Yeah,
I could do top 5 Metroidvania, top 5 Zelda.
And then I would love to also table top 10 board games for different occasions.
Okay.
So something to think on. So if you want to recommend any to us, things that you think we could top 10 for you as recommendations, or things that you want to suggest to us that we should be playing and reviewing, do get in touch. Some of you have done recently on Insta. We're on Insta. We're on X. We monitor it a bit less, but we do monitor it. And also, if you're enjoying what we're doing and want us to be talking about more games with you, please like, share, support this podcast. We do this just for fun. Because we what?
We like doing fun things and playing games.
We like playing games. That was the answer I was looking for. Thank you. Thank you. We're running out of steam, everyone. Slick. We need more coffee. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time. Happy Lunar New Year.
Happy Lunar New Year.
Bye bye. Eight's lucky.